See you right after the international.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the November 17th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off with African men's football and the qualifying campaign for the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Qatar. 10 African teams remain in contention for Qatar after the closing of November's qualifying window. They are, in alphabetical order, Algeria, the reigning African champion, Cameroon, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Egypt, Ghana, Mali, Morocco, Nigeria, Senegal, and Tunisia. They'll be drawn into 5 home and away ties in March 2022, and the winners of those 5 ties will advance to the World Cup in Qatar. On Tuesday, Algeria, Cameroon, Nigeria, and Tunisia all advance to the 10-team playoff round, playing at home in Blida. The Desert Foxes of Algeria drew 2-2 with the Stallions of Burkina Faso. The Algerians top Group A with 14 points, with the Burkinabe 2 points back. In Group B, Tunisia finished on top with 13 points after a 3-1 victory against visiting Zambia. In Group C, Nigeria finished on top with 13 points after a 1-1 draw against visiting Cape Verde in Lagos. Iron Mike Mbonye filed this post-match report from Nigeria's commercial capital.
The Super Eagles of Nigeria have booked a place in the final round of the African series for the 2022 FIFA World Cup finals. In the final Group C match played at the Teslim Balogun Stadium, Lagos, Cape Verde forced Nigeria to a 1-1 draw. Nigeria topped the group with 13 points. Cape Verde came second with 11 points. Liberia had 6 points, while Central African Republic finished bottom of the group with 4 points. Victor Osimhen, Napoli forward, scored Nigeria's goal in the first minute of the game, while Stopira equalized for Cape Verde in the 6th minute. Nigeria missed some scoring chances in the first half. The Blue Sharks of Cape Verde, who needed a win to qualify, worked hard to get the winning goal in the second half, but the Nigerian defense thwarted their efforts. Super Eagles head coach Geno Rohr says, though his team qualified for the final round of the 2022 World Cup, the game was not easy.
First of all, sometimes a draw can be like a victory. That was the case today because we wanted to qualify and we knew that a draw is already qualification. It was not an easy game because Cape Verde has a very good technical team and they scored a goal in the moment when we believed that we had the match in the hand. But we missed a lot of chances in the first half especially, and I think that we deserve to score a second goal. Second goal was not coming, so we had to defend this draw, and the players did it very well.
Ross says returnee Super Eagles forward Odion Ighalo, who also played against Cape Verde, has not been with the team for some time. He says Ighalo needed some games to blend with the team. The Nigerian coach says the Super Eagles will undergo some improvements ahead of the African Cup of Nations and the World Cup playoffs.
The improvement I want to see is to exploit the opportunities we have to score, to be more effective offensively. That's what I want to see, and also to play quicker from behind. It's still too slow from behind for me. I want to have a quicker football with 1-2 touches coming from behind. Our central defenders still take much time to bring the balls forward. So we have to work on it.
Fisayo Dairo, an African football analyst and chief football writer at www.acsports.com in Nigeria, says despite qualifying for the final round of the 2022 FIFA World Cup, the Super Eagles were not impressive.
Many Nigerians feel the team should be doing better, and there is a growing worry ahead of next year's Africa Cup of Nations to be hosted by Cameroon starting from January that this team is heading for doom. I hate to be like a prophet of doom, but what lies ahead for the Super Eagles doesn't look bright at all. Even the caliber of teams that Nigeria might face in the playoff round of the World Cup qualifying also sends shivers down the spines of the fans.
The final round of the African series for the FIFA World Cup finals will take place in March 2022. 10 teams that qualified will be grouped into 5 and will play home and away games. The winners of the games will qualify for the 2022 FIFA World Cup finals to be held in Qatar. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Ayo Mike Mbonye in Lagos, Nigeria.
Sporty Grace, and this is Victor Osimhen, Super Eagles of Nigeria and Napoli FC forward. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Victor Osimhen has been Nigeria's leading scorer during 2022 World Cup qualifying. As Iron Mike Mbonye told us, Victor scored in the opening minute of Tuesday's match against Cape Verde, and he now has 4 goals in African World Cup qualifying. In African World Cup qualifying, Group D action on Tuesday, Lyon man Carl Toko Ekambi scored in the 21st minute as Cameroon beat visiting Ivory Coast 1-0 in Douala. It's being described as one of the best matches in African World Cup qualifying. Ajax goalkeeper Andre Onana made some good saves for Cameroon, which is bidding for its 8th appearance at the World Cup. The indomitable Lions of Cameroon finished on top of Group D with 15 points. The Elephants of Ivory Coast were second with 13 points. Meanwhile, it was once again a disappointing World Cup qualifying campaign for football teams from East Africa. Joining us now from Kampala, Uganda, is Magume Davis Rakawinj. Sporty Wednesday greetings, Magume.
Sporty Wednesday greetings to Tusane and our listeners. Uganda, Rwanda, and Kenya placed alongside each other against West Africa and Mali in Group E of the Qatar 2022 World Cup qualifiers did not manage to amass enough points to see them through the final round of the World Cup qualifiers. Rwanda's Amavubi finished bottom of the group with a dismal 1 point to the disappointment of fans. And with only 2 goals in the campaign, all coming of neighbours Kenya, in a 1-1 draw at home and in a 1-2 away loss, Amavubi coach Vincent Mashami is well aware his striking force needs more sharpening.
We lacked some consistency, we lacked some aggressivity in the final third, so I think we need to get back our boys to the best level for us to compete to the top level.
Sports analyst Felix Gakuba Romario says he wasn't surprised by the poor Amavubi performance. He says the local soccer governing body, FERWAFA, has to meet with all stakeholders in football, such as former international players, and plan for football development in the country.
We need football academies. We need the clubs to function in the right way. That is the only way that will help the Rwandan football move from the very poor stage where it is to the stage that is needed.
Goals also evaded Kenya until when the Harambee Stars were playing for just pride, having sacked coach Jacob Augusti Mule and appointed Turkish Engin Firat. Julius Juma is a sports journalist in Kenya.
The country started with the draws, a barren draw against Uganda, followed by a 1-1 draw against the Amavubi of Rwanda in Kigali, then followed by a 5-0 drubbing against Mali in Morocco, then a 1-0 beating by the same Mali here in Nyayo Stadium. But the last two games really showed some signs of optimism from that team. Coach Engin Firat was definitely a man who showed that he can be able to pick up a win. Performance of Harambee Stars in the World Cup, qualifiers the World Cup, it was one of a roller coaster.
Uganda Cranes finished second in Group E, albeit a 7 points difference of leaders Mali. Leon Senyange, a sports analyst in Uganda, says after most senior players, including experienced goalkeeper Dennis Onyango, resigned from the Uganda Cranes setup, the team was expected to struggle in the qualifiers.
Trying to up their game in the World Cup qualifier was definitely a lot to ask for. Then, of course, there in comes the new coach in Mitchell, trying to set up what he believes would work for him. On a whole, I think for me, more importantly, is that a younger group of players got more playtime. And that will, of course, be the basis on which the FA can grow those players and ensure that for the future.
Uganda Cranes coach Mirutin Srodovich Micho, who fielded some players from the AFCON under 20 finalists, is buoyant his team is destined to become a reckoning force in Africa.
We are looking from their generation to put four more players that will make us having, like, let us say, Ivory Coast. They had a golden generation with Drogba, with Yaya Toure, with whomever more. And I believe in Ugandan players. I believe in work we do. And I believe that we shall improve very much and that we shall become what everyone expects us to be.
Another East African representative, Tanzania, in Group B alongside DR Congo, Benin and Madagascar, finished a respectable third, but with only 3 points less group winners, DR Congo. Tanzania football fan and a pundit, Daniel Mulumuka, says he's proud of the Taifa Stars' performance.
I'm also much disappointed. This is just a reality check on the Tanzanian football. So what you're supposed to do right now, as we as Tanzanians have to look upon other tournaments, especially the AFCON. We have to be regulars in AFCON tournament for us to be able to qualify for the World Cup. We have to be regulars in CHAN. After being able to be regulars in CHAN, in AFCON, then we are able to compete for the World Cup in 2026.
All the analysts here contend there is no shortcut in football development. They say local federations should build stronger youth sides and improve local competitions for a chance to succeed in international competitions such as the African Cup of Nations and the FIFA World Cup. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Dear respected friends, sports greetings. This is Milutin Micho Sredovic, national coach of Uganda Cranes. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight? Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Thanks, Larry. That's Larry London, a man who's always ready to cross musical borders. I encourage our Sunny Side of Sports listeners to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. Once again, my Twitter handle, @VOA Sunny Sports. Greece and U.S. tech giant Microsoft have teamed up to digitally revive the ancient birthplace of the Olympic Games. The ambitious project uses technology to immerse viewers in the world of ancient Olympia. Anthi Karasava reports from Athens, Greece.
The collaboration between Microsoft and the Greek Culture Ministry will allow millions of visitors to immerse themselves in an experience that organizers say brings history to life. At a recent news conference in Olympia, the birthplace of the Olympic Games, Microsoft officials said they used artificial intelligence to map the site, augmenting reality to help restore the sacrosanct location as it might have looked some 2,000 years ago. Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis attended the launch and said the project would revive Greece's greatest commodity, its history.
Technology is opening up a completely different way of experiencing what our cultural heritage is all about. And the project in Olympia is so important because it demonstrates the power of technology, the ability to not just look at the site itself, but also the lives of people, how societies were organized.
Among the 27 monuments being featured are the original Olympic Stadium, the temples of Zeus and Hera, and the workshop of the renowned sculptor Phidias. Through data provided by Greek archaeologists, the sites are as close as possible to their original forms. In-person visitors are provided with smart glasses at the site so they can get an idea of what the location would have looked like in ancient times. Visitors also see timelines of how the sites have changed over time, as well as depictions of artifacts from various periods. Antigone Papanikolaou of Microsoft explained in a presentation.
It's like passing the flame from the old generations to the next. The fact that we can now go and experience how our predecessors were creating and living and seeing that as it was in ancient Greece, it's amazing.
Organizers say people who are not able to visit the site in southern Greece will be able to take a virtual tour using a computer or mobile app. Critics tell the Associated Press that the program will extend the invasive power of U.S. tech giants. Work on the ambitious project took 18 months, with drones and sensors being used to help map the sites. Officials in Greece, a treasure trove of antiquities, say the cultural implications for the country are now endless. Antti Karasava for VOA News, Athens.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including President Joe Biden signed a bipartisan $1 trillion infrastructure bill that earned final passage in Congress after months of negotiations. The legislation calls for massive spending across the country to improve roads, bridges, and transportation. This and lots more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Thanks, Kim. World Athletics this year launched the first 3D virtual sports museum. It's an up-close, personal, and immersive experience for online visitors. The museum is hosted by the official World Athletics website, and you can check it out at this address, worldathletics.org/MOWA. That's M-O-W-A. Once again, the address, worldathletics.org/MOWA, M-O-W-A. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to the energetic Andy Edwards and his feature on the Museum of World Athletics. Sporty greetings, Andy!
Sporty greetings, Sunny. The Museum of World Athletics went online on March 15th. Launched by the World Athletics president, Sebastian Coe, himself a double Olympic champion in the middle distances. This site will grow through the course of the year, expanding into what should be a treasure trove of historic memorabilia. It was fitting that the launch came 1 week after International Women's Day, since it included the presentation of a heritage plaque for the late Greta Weitz of Norway, the first ever world champion in the women's marathon and winner of 9 New York Marathon titles. There'll be more about her and the charismatic coach who guided Australia's Herb Elliott to greatness in the mile and 1500 metres in a moment. But first, here's Sebastian Coe on how MOWA, the Museum of World Athletics, online will develop this year.
Looking ahead in July this year, the second stage of MOWA will be opened with our Olympic Athletics Collection Room. Then in the autumn, indoor athletics, cross-country, road running and race walking will be highlighted with the launch of our indoor and out-of-stadia collections room. It is the 3D technology which makes the Museum of World Athletics unique. MOWA is designed to look and feel like a real building. The visitor can roam around the museum freely and interact with over 60 exhibits and more than 400 items of supporting content, text, photos, and video. The museum platform, which is located on the World Athletics website, has content in both English and French.
When Greta Weitz was a junior international on the track and cross-country for Norway in the 1970s, women didn't have longer distances such as the 5 and 10,000 metres on the track, nor were there any championship titles at stake for them in the marathon. Weitz lacked the finishing speed to be a title threat on the track, but a marathon debut in New York in 1979 aroused her curiosity. Her husband, Jack, was a decent standard club runner himself and advised her in what turned out to be a career-changing victory, the first of 9 in New York City.
We never talked tactics. We had no idea about marathon. I told her the day of the marathon that she should just stay behind all the girls. It's going to be slow for you, but it's going to hurt. And of course, she didn't listen and she took off and she was really, really in pain. The last 10-12K, and she broke the record, ran 2:32, and she was stormed by the US media. She was used to win races in Europe, but this was different. But she was so angry at me that I had talked her into misery, so she threw the shoes at me and said, that's it, never again.
In 1983, the first of what has become a sequence of so far 17 world championships in athletics was held in Helsinki. By then, Greta Weitz was the established number one. Elite women and mass runners were out on the roads and competing in unprecedented numbers. Now, Joan Benoit of the USA dashed her hopes of becoming the first women's Olympic champion in the marathon in Los Angeles the following year. But Weitz, who was sadly to die of cancer at the age of 57 in 2011, had made a lasting legacy for the sport. Sebastian Coe, who shared a platform with Jack Weitz during the online launch, reflected on Greta Weitz's achievement, seeing her as part of a long line following such Olympic stars as Fanny Blankers-Koen of the Netherlands and the USA's Babe Didriksen.
I put her contribution in our sport alongside athletes like Fanny Blankers-Koen, Babe Didriksen in 1932 in L.A., Irina Shevinska, you know, Wyoming Tyus. I mean, these are absolute standout athletes, and for what she did to globalize distance running for women was absolutely inseparable from our history. So, Jack, it goes without saying, we're incredibly grateful for the donation, and we're equally pleased to have been able to just reflect on her career and mark it in our wonderful new museum.
A second heritage plaque was awarded to a coach, the figure who so often proves a catalyst in an athlete's career. Percy Cerruti from Australia was an uncompromising thinker who nurtured above all the development of Herb Elliott, who won the Olympic 1500 metres in Rome in 1960, breaking the world record as he left rivals trailing. Cerruti, who died at the age of 80 in 1975, was in many ways ahead of his time in terms of nutrition. While there was nothing easygoing about his self-made running camp on the sand dunes in Portsea near Melbourne, he developed an approach which was part Spartan in simplicity, part philosopher in its quest for greatness. And here is Herb Elliott on his mentor.
I would not be what I am. Or where I am, if it hadn't been for him. The lucky accident of meeting Percy Cerruti when I was 17 or 18 years of age, still at school. And at that age, where you want to smoke cigarettes, and I hated school. Once you get out of there, have a few grogs, go out with your mates, all that. You're at that age of 18 where you don't quite, you could go anywhere. And Percy came into my life and took me where I went. He was like a father. I lived in a small little apartment in Melbourne when I first met him. He lived in a house that was the size of a garage, and he had his bed and his cooking stuff and everything in there, and he had me. I used to turn up every night to eat with him because his wife was a really good cook. And there you are. We had a lot of time together, Percy and I, and he was a very, very tough, very ruthless, very positive man, but at the same time, he was a highly inspiring, and he would just inspire us so much. You want to go and shake the trees and, you know, shake the world, and he was fantastic.
Sebastian Coe and Herb Elliott, during the museum launch, joked that their chat was turning into a mutual admiration society, but both have earned their laurels for their exploits on the track. If more recent fans of track and field are less familiar with the magnitude of Herb Elliott's achievements, Sebastian Coe, winner of the 1500 gold at the Moscow Olympics of 1980 and again in Los Angeles 4 years later, put them in context.
You are the person that I've always looked to in my sport. I still think your 1500 metre run in Rome was the definitive run. To break a world record and to win an Olympic title in such a definitive way was really the template that I just drew heavily on for the rest of my career.
World Athletics set up its heritage department in 2018, and MOWA is a big step forward in public access online. By the end of this year, many more items will be available online for viewing, and the history of the number one Olympic sport will be set out in ever greater detail. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Andy Edwards in London.
Sport greetings, everyone. This is Falilat Ogukoya, Olympic silver and bronze medalist. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sport on Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and afford contracting COVID-19.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In National Basketball Association action Tuesday night, two-time league most valuable player Stephen Curry of the Golden State Warriors once again showed how valuable he is during a road victory in New York City. The AP's Mike Moriarty reports from New York.
In an early season matchup between two of the league's best teams, it was Steph Curry pouring in a game-high 37 points to lead the Warriors to a 117-99 victory on the road at Brooklyn.
It's a perfect storm of that and coming off of, you know, a loss where you didn't play well. So it's not the playoffs, but it's an intensity that you know you have to show up if you're going to beat a team like that. So you definitely lock in, get focused, and you thrive off that competitive, you know, atmosphere, knowing that there's a lot of talent on the floor.
Curry was 9-14 from beyond the three-point arc, dazzling the crowd who chanted and cheered for Curry several times in the game. It was a back-and-forth contest in the first half, but the Warriors put it out of reach, outscoring Brooklyn 35-18 in the third quarter. James Harden and Kevin Durant had 24 and 19 points respectively, but it was not enough as the Nets lost their fifth game of the season. The Warriors have won 8 out of their last 10 as they picked up their league-best 12th victory on the year. Mike Moriarty, New York.
Thanks, Mike. Now let's head west to Salt Lake City, Utah, where the Utah Jazz trounced the Philadelphia 76ers. The AP's Tom Merriam reports.
The Utah Jazz routed the Philadelphia 76ers 120-85. The Jazz led by only two after the first quarter, but then outscored Philly 67-38 over the next two quarters to run away with it. Utah's defense was the difference, holding the Sixers to just 19 points in each of the final three quarters, anchored by Rudy Gobert, who grabbed 17 rebounds and blocked four shots.
It's all about, you know, being able to adjust quick and raise a level, you know, and I think we all took pride this year in raising our level, especially on 1-on-1 defense.
Bojan Bogdanovic led the Jazz with 27 points. The Sixers have now lost five straight games, all since Joel Embiid went on the COVID list. I'm Tom Merriam.
Thanks, Tom. And I know Philadelphia is looking forward to getting their Cameroonian star, Joel Embiid, back on the basketball court. In one more NBA result from Tuesday night, the Los Angeles Clippers beat the San Antonio Spurs 106-92.
We'll be right back.
wraps up the November 17th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.